podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Raw, The Fight Within, a brand new podcast series hosted by me, Coogan Cassius. Over the course of the series, I'll be sitting down with some of the most high-profile figures from the world of boxing, including fighters, trainers, and promoters, in order to dig a little deeper and understand their own personal stories. This podcast is about much more than simply what happens inside the ring. It's about the journey, the sacrifices, the agony, the ecstasy, the highs, the lows, the tears, and the fears. It's about getting to know the person. Thank you for tuning in, and I really hope you enjoy it. If you do, be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. This podcast is suitable for over 18s only, as it may contain adult content and explicit language. Okay, delighted to welcome Ebony Bridges to my podcast. Ebony, listen, we all know what you've achieved inside the ring so far, and we've heard the insights of your training, your life as a fighter, but now we want to get to know who you are outside of the ring, the battles and the scars you carry with you every day, the stories that will truly inspire and give fight fans the opportunity to see a side that they may or may have not seen before. Today isn't about you as a fighter, it's about you as a person. Are you all right with that?
Oh, I'm okay with it. I'm okay. God. Let's get the tissues. No.
Not yet. I'm going to ease you in slowly into this because I think with yourself, people kind of, the majority of people, I know you've done a few podcasts, etc., kind of talking about stuff from your past and kind of how you've got to where you are now. But I think for myself, it's like every week or every time there's a fight, it's the same questions. You could almost predict the questions I'm going to ask you to a certain extent. So this is going to be a little bit different. We're going to start easy and we're going to try and work our way in. Are you good with that?
I'm good. Let's see how we go. Okay. See where this takes us.
Absolutely. Ebony, what's your first memory of boxing? Do you remember your first memory of boxing, the first time kind of it ever played any kind of image in your mind?
Probably just watching Costa Zoo when I was in my teens. I think boxing in particular. I was a big fan of just combat sports, so I always loved watching kickboxing, boxing, all the action movies. You know, Steven Seagal, Van Damme, huge Van Damme fan. But yeah, I would say probably growing up with Costa Zoo would be my first memory of boxing. And then from that.
Do you remember the first fight you went to? Like where you were like physically there as opposed to like watching it on TV or anything. Just the first fight you were physically at.
Oh, physically. Oh, as boxing fight. Oh my God, it was a mundane fight. Was it mundane? I think it was a mundane fight. But then I'm having memories of a fight when Roy Jones came over as well and he hurt his back. So, yeah, I mean, it was a while ago, probably like my late teens.
Okay. So you talk about Costa Zoo there, but do you remember kind of, is that the first fighter that you kind of watched and kind of, there's always, everyone has some fighter that they've always watched. For me, it was Nassim Hamed, the first fighter that I kind of took notice of. And for yourself, would you say it was Costa Zoo that kind of got your interest into boxing as the first person in boxing as a boxer that you took interest in?
I would say Costa Zoo and Mike Tyson. Would have to see both of them. Obviously, Costa Zoo, because he was Australian or Russian Australian, and there was a lot of promotion around Costa Zoo in Australia, and I, so, you know, because back then we didn't have like what we have now with the streaming and stuff, do you know what I mean? So it was all that was on TV. Otherwise it was like just tapes or CDs from friends that had, you know, boxing fights that I'd watch, like the old boxing fights and CDs. So yeah, but
you're really showing our age now, because
I have, like, DVDs. I remember once I borrowed, like, from my friend DVDs. He had, like, a stack of, like, those DVDs and, thing, all boxing fights, and I just used to watch them, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, showing our age. Yeah, otherwise, yeah, it wasn't much. I don't remember seeing, like, a lot of the big fights on TV outside of Australia. Just mainly tapes and stuff and tapes. VHS.
VHS, yeah. Yeah, I know. There's people watching this going, what's that? Are Googling what VHS is right now. Absolutely.
Tapes. What's a tape? Yeah. No, but yeah, so, and that kind of from there, I suppose.
Because now it's quite easy for people to get into boxing and kind of watch these interviews that I do or whoever else does and kind of get to know fighters. But back then, we're talking like 15, however many years ago, it was
20 years ago. Yeah, like 20 years ago. I remember being like 15 watching on DVDs with my boyfriend because he was into boxing as well, watching with his dad and stuff, like just video, like DVDs. And
VHS.
VHS, yeah. Yeah, so, and also stuff on TV, you know, Fox, so.
I've still got some VHSs.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have, yeah. There's some stuff I have got on VHS, yeah, like boxing things, because that's how, if you wanted to tape something or record something, that's how you did it.
Yeah, look, my memories of my teens weren't great, so, I mean, I can't remember fucking most days, but I do remember those glimpses of things like that. Yeah.
Okay, so, look, if you were to start your own fight club. So this is my interpretation of this, right? So if you were to start your own fight club, right, and you were to pick a team of you and four other people.
Four, okay.
So it's you plus four. So I want one for the ring, like in the ring.
Oh, like a fighter.
Yeah, so you're basically assembling a fight team.
Team, okay.
Like, yeah, your own fight club.
Okay.
Right. So you're going to pick one for the ring, but then you're going to pick one for the street.
Okay.
Okay. It could be anyone. You can use literally, don't even have to use boxers. You can use absolutely anyone.
Jake Paul. No. Okay.
In the ring. You can tag, by the way. It's my game, so I can make the fucking rules up. Tag. So you can tag. You can tag them in if you need them.
Oh, okay.
It's like a 5-on-5 situation.
Oh, okay. Mike Tyson.
All right.
Yep.
Okay.
He's a psycho, yeah.
That's Ebony, Mike Tyson. Yeah.
Yep.
Who else? In the ring.
Oh, in the ring.
Yeah, in the ring.
Julio Cesar Chavez.
Okay.
Muhammad Ali. And I was so tempted to say Roy Jones, but I mean, there's so many. I don't want to say my favourites because, yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think of the skills, you know what I mean? Maybe Mayweather. But then I'm like, what kind of fight is it? You're going to make me analyse way too much. Depends on who I'm fighting, of who I want in the ring, you know?
The side you're fighting hasn't been announced yet.
I know, I'm OCD, so I'm like, okay, so I feel like I need a defensive boxer, I need an aggressive boxer, I need, like, a Mexican, so there I've got those, but yeah. Say that. What did we say? What was it? Three.
So you've gone Tyson, you've gone Chavez Senior.
Yeah.
Like in his prime. Yeah.
Yes.
You went Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. Oh, Muhammad Ali. Yeah.
You.
Yeah. Oh, me. Yeah. I said Mayweather.
And Mayweather. Yeah. So that would be your kind of five in the ring. Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to take it to the streets, so there's completely different rules. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for the purpose of this conversation, this is all hypothetical, just so people don't jump on the bandwagon.
Well, I know what Muhammad Ali is still alive. What are you talking about?
So, who would you pick alongside yourself in street combat, hypothetically?
Okay, Conor McGregor.
Okay.
That Khabib.
Yeah.
See, now I'm going to name a whole bunch of MMA fighters. Mike Tyson still.
Yeah.
Canelo.
Canelo?
Yeah.
You think Canelo would be more handy in a street fight than
the
ring?
I didn't think about him as being in the ring, to be honest, because I always think of the greats when I think about, you know, like boxing. I don't think of current. But, yeah, so I'm going to chuck Canelo in there. I don't know. Maybe who else? I've got to think of a dirty fighter. He's fucking dirty. I mean, there's heaps of them. Maybe someone with, like, guts, like Gatti, or maybe, you know, like, Arturo Gatti, yeah.
Okay. Just so you know, when I did this with Fabio Wardley, he chose, like, for his street team, he chose, like, Kimbo Slice.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He chose Alan Babich.
Right? Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Shit.
Alan Babbage in a street fight, you'd take him, wouldn't you? But he kind of, yeah, he was... and I think he chose, like... he put Bruce Lee in there as well.
Oh, yeah, nice. Oh, yeah, yeah. Thinking outside the square, see? I'm a little bit close-minded.
Okay, so that's, yeah, just to, like, warm you in and kind of just get a little insight on fighters that you like. So, talk to me about... Again, this is subjective to however you want to interpret this, but a fight that you'd like to see. It doesn't matter whether they're not here anymore, they are here anymore, whether it will happen, whether it won't happen. It doesn't have to involve you. Just from your perspective, a fight that you'd like to see.
Well, I think a fight that I would have loved to see would have been Ali and Tyson in their prime. And I think a fight that we need to see is Spence and Crawford. Like, yeah, we need that fight. But, yeah, I'd say those two. Yeah. I'd probably be right up there.
And if I was to pick a... Or you to pick a winner from those two fights?
I honestly can't pick... I can't pick the Muhammad Ali Tyson one. That's why I want to say it. And with the Crawford Spence one, I would be leaning towards Crawford. But they're both just so spiteful. They're both just like right up there. So it's another, these are just fights. The fights that I want to see are the fights that I want to see who's the best without, because I don't know, you know? So I want to see them.
So it's more to answer a question in your head?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's more to answer a question in my head. Yeah.
Okay. If you weren't in this business, if you weren't in boxing, so not even just as a fighter, what do you think currently you'd be doing now?
I'd probably be teaching, hey, or just something with youth. Anything to help the youth be better, you know, within themselves and just kind of building the, I think, mindset and mentality that you need to be successful. But I think it's important to start in youth and getting our children and adolescents to really, like, believe in themselves and believe things can happen. So, you know, even helping like any kind of like victims, like youth victims, victims of child abuse and stuff like that, like that's really my passion. So I think I'll definitely be doing something like that.
Do you ever think about that? Like if you wasn't in the situation, because your kind of turnaround in boxing has happened over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So do you ever think about kind of if things hadn't kind of panned out the way they are, that possibly what you'd be doing, do you think that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if I didn't become as successful as I am in boxing, then I would probably still be teaching. I'd be back in Australia and teaching in between my boxing, like what I was doing when I first started my career. I do love teaching. It's a passion for me. But realistically, like, boxing's, you've only got a limited amount of time with boxing. And as much as I love teaching and it is a passion for me, I mean, I hate to say money's the thing, but, you know, to give up, like, you know, for how much you get paid to teach, to be doing what I'm doing in boxing and being able to also inspire not just my, you know, say if I have, you know, 5 classes of 30 or something, you know what I mean? Like, say it's like, you know, 150 kids or like a school where now I can actually inspire like the greater public, you know, that same message and that same kind of stuff that I try and teach and push on and want people to believe in. I can do it on a bigger picture now, and the bigger my name gets, bigger my platform gets, the more I'm able to send that message. You know, which I think is really important for me. It's super important because it's something I really am strongly firm believer in. And, so for me it's just like now I originally started teaching so I could inspire the kids and also with, like, youth, because I know I had a really troubled youth, and I just feel like, you know, there's times when I really gave up on myself, and I think, like, if I can get them young and let them and, like, resonate with them a little bit and be able to teach these kids, hey, if you actually have the right mindset and don't give up on yourself or you try, anything's really possible, because I've fucking done it. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I've got a second chance at life, and look at me, I'm killing it. You know what I mean? Like, if I could have gone two ways, you know, it'd be very different. Like, I'd be like, I don't even think I'd be even here, you know? So I think the reason I started teaching was to get the kids at that age that I was at, that really influential kind of really age where, you know, you're getting really, I don't know what the word is, I thought it was influenced, you know, by whatever, and having a good person there to be able to kind of send good messages and keep you on the right kind of path, but not in a sense of like a, I'm not that kind of teacher that's like you can't resonate with. I'm not that kind of teacher. It's like it's all about discipline and like this is what we have to do, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's about kind of building those relationships and teaching and getting the kids to really believe in themselves, I think. And now that I'm able, that's why I started teaching. But now I'm kind of, I feel like I can do that on a greater scale now, you know. Obviously with children and with adolescent, and that's a big place in my heart. But even with adults, like, because even when you're 30 or 40, it's not too late to change your life. And you could be in the fucking dumps and in the gutter, but at 40 and you can change your whole fucking life. You just got to do it, you know. And I think it's really important for me to push that message. And I'm all about no quit, as you know. In the boxing ring, I don't quit. And I'm like, I don't quit nothing. Like, you know, and no matter what I do, no matter how hard it gets. And I think it's really important to have that kind of mindset. When things are really fucking hard, don't quit on yourself. Don't give up on yourself. So, yeah, I mean, I'd like to do that in a bigger scale. And I'm rambling a lot here, but when I get on a bigger platform, obviously the more platform I have, the more name I have, it's connected with that message that I have. And hopefully I can help a lot of people and inspire a lot of people. You know, guys, girls, kids, whatever.
Sorry. No, don't apologise. No,
I'm like,
no.
I don't get what I'm saying, but it's no, kind of scattering everywhere.
Right. I'm sure when you listen to it back, it all makes sense. Maybe not to us, but yeah. Maybe to you. I'm only joking. Do you remember outside of the ring, the first ever kind of confrontation or argument you ever got into that was kind of what you'd register as serious, whenever that was, when you were growing up? Do you remember that?
Not really. I mean, like with my parents arguing because I was a little fucking cunt, excuse my language, but right. Like... I don't know, like...
There must have been a point, like, when you were growing up that there was some kind of serious, whether it was an altercation, argument, whatever it was, that kind of stood out as... I think everyone has one of them. You don't recall?
Not like a confrontation, not really, if I'm honest.
Was it a fight?
I mean, I've had fights. I've had plenty of street fights. But how young are we talking? Like, I mean, I got into heaps of fights when I was, like, 16. So I can tell you plenty of fights.
No.
But if you're talking about just, like, a confrontation, I don't know what you mean.
Okay,
like,
your first...
Do you want
okay.
me to tell you a fucking bar fight?
It can be a fight. It can be a confrontation. Whatever you perceive that. The first serious one that you think you had. I want to know about these fucking bar fights now.
No, I had more fights, not just bar fights, but I mean fights. Obviously, I wasn't in a bar when I was like 14, 15, but I had fights. There's heaps. Like, fucking...
Pick one that stands out then. It hasn't got to be your first one. Pick one that stands out. This is actually quite interesting now.
All right, I dropped an ex-boyfriend because he stalked me for like 3 years when I was 16. I think I was 16. And I went out with this guy... And he was like, I broke up with him for 6 months and he was just a fruit loop. Like he was like 5 years older than me as well. And he would just fucking, he lived across the road. It was just a fucking mess. And he would just harass me all the time. And I was training back then, like doing Muay Thai and kickboxing and stuff. So I've always been training, you know, as I did martial arts since I was five. So I'd always been training and I was walking down the street with a guy when I was doing my mechanics apprenticeship. And we're walking down the street and I seen my ex-boyfriend and he's come up and he was like yelling out at me earlier and I went up to him, I grabbed him by the shirt and I pushed him. I'm like, you know, why do you have to be such a fuckwit for, right? And then I went to hit him and I missed and I was like, oh, fuck, that was embarrassing. Anyways, he kept going. Then I was like, oh, I'm going to go back home. And I went to home to get my brothers. And so I went home with this guy from TAFE and to get my brothers. And I go, oi, Justin, my brother. I'm like, I just hit so-and-so. I don't want to drop no names, but I just hit so-and-so. No, let's go get him. I was like, all right. So we're going across the road again, right? And he's coming back with his shopping and he drops his shopping bag and we're crossing the road and he comes up to me and he goes, oh, nice hit, Eb, like this. And he puts his chin out and I just went bang and like dropped him in the middle of the fucking road, right? And then it was like his grandpa came out and started yelling at my brother. My dad's going, shut up, you old cunt, like this. All like fucking, it was just like a riot on the ground. Like that was a pretty good, and I felt really good about that because I was like, fuck that guy, shut him up, you know what I mean? So that was a good fight. I mean, what other fights? I mean, I can go all day. I've had heaps. Girls, I've like had a girl that
this
was...
This is weird though to listen, no disrespect, to listen to you even talking about kind of you've been in street fights, bar fights, yeah, like, it's crazy, but...
I had another guy, like, another guy that was harassing me at a festival. I think I was, like, maybe 17 or 18, probably. No, I was younger. It was a concert. That's why I was, like, younger. No, it was a concert. And I think I was, again, like, about 15, no, 16, maybe 17. And he was coming and he was harassing me. And I pushed him. And then he wouldn't, like, fucking leave me alone. So then I hit him again. And I hit him. And then I went to pick up a stick. And I remember I hit him with a stick. And my friend's like, don't hit him with an object, Abby. You'll get in trouble for hitting him with an object. I'm like, fuck, stay fucking away from me. Like, you know, yeah, I fucking hit him right in the jaw, that one. I mean, I got into... Oh, man, I got some really good fucking... I got a really good pub fight, if you want to listen to that one.
We'll listen to a pub fight. Come on.
All right, hit us pub fight. Go. This is a good story.
In Australia, yes.
In Australia. I can't get into too much details because, obviously, you know, don't want to get in trouble. But I did have a pub fight where I was sitting and I was with my friends. It was called, like, the Wallaby Bar. If the Australians are watching this, they'll know the Wallaby Bar. And we're sitting there and sitting on this chair and this, these big, like, Islander girls. So they're, like, big, you know, girls. There was, like, a group of five of them. And they're, like... being really loud as they do and, like, knocking me and stuff. And I'm like, fuck, man. I'm like, well, can you, like move over a little bit? You keep, like, knocking me with when you're talking. And they're like, what? And I'm like, you keep knocking me. They're like, oh, we keep elbowing you. Oh, we keep knocking you. So they're giving me shit, right? And I'm like, oh. And I'm not, like, a trouble starter. Like, I have to, it takes a lot, right? My friends, she's getting more worked up. She goes, Abby, you gonna let him do that? I'm like, oh, fuck him, you know, whatever. And they're, like, kept going on. Every time, like, their friends come over, oh, don't fucking knock me like this. And so I'm drinking, I have a couple of cigarettes, I'm drinking, and I'm just, like, sitting there. My friend's like, come on, Eb. And I'm like, all right, you got my back. And she's like, yeah. I'm like, all right. So I'm, like, taking my watch off, and I'm, like, sitting there. And I go, you ready? And she goes, yeah. And we're on this lounge. And so I've gone like this, and I've gone bang, like this with my all my might, bang, this girl's face. Actually, as they've gone to get drinks, so they went to get drinks off these guys. These guys came to give them drinks. And then it was, like, this massive, like, I don't even know what happened. I was sitting down, like, because I was sitting down like this, and they're, like, hammer hitting my, it sound, felt like they were slapping my head, like, and then I was there, and I had my hand, just one hand, and I couldn't feel anything. I couldn't do anything because I had one arm covering my face, and I'm sitting down, and I put my finger, and I felt her mouth, so I put my finger in her mouth, and I ripped her, and I ripped her whole mouth open with a big fish hook. Blood everywhere. It was nuts. And, yeah, then I remember I got up, and I had, like, extensions and stuff, and I had, like, teeth bite marks on me and everything, and we, like, kind of ran outside of the club downstairs and, like, just bolted, man. And it was crazy. I remember I went down to a restaurant downstairs with my hair all hanging out, blood all over my fucking hands and all bite marks in me. I remember, like, cleaning myself up, and my friend's like, where are you? What did you do to that girl? The boyfriend comes down and goes, man, what did you do to her? She was sitting there like this with her hands behind and her mouth like this, and there was all blood, like, pissing out of her mouth because I must have obviously ripped her. In a gum open. But yeah, that was fun. I mean, there's more. I push kicked a girl, like, elbow girls. Like, but mind you, they all fucking started with me. That was another good story as well. I don't want to keep going.
No, so listen, you've given us three good examples. But what we'll ask about that is, does it, now you're kind of...
getting hyped now, I'm going to fucking fight. No.
Careful. I definitely don't want this smoke here.
Yeah.
Ebony, does it register you now because kind of... Your life has kind of a career direction and you're sitting here as a world champion. Does it register that this sort of stuff that you're talking to me isn't fucking normal? Does it register? Maybe for you, but just listening it's not really normal.
It's maybe not semi-normal, but when you get picked on as well, you know, and, like, I can talk a lot of things. There's always people starting me. Like, there was some other big fights where, I mean, I got hit first, you know what I mean? Or I got slapped first, and I just happened to be the better fighter because I trained, and so I'm the one that is hurting them, you know what I mean? Like, and, like I said, like, boyfriends harassing me. Like, I, you know, like, I probably wouldn't... Obviously, now that I'm a fighter, like, an actual fighter, then I was just training and I was a teen and I was just a fucking, like, psycho. You know, I kind of would hit... people if they hit me, but now I don't know if I would, you know. I want to protect the hands, you know. I've already got a busted hand, but I did, to be fair, I never really threw many punches. There's those guys I threw punches. Every other fight I've been in was elbows and knees and, like, headlocks and shit, so it was a bit more smart, you know, kicks and that, because and mind you, I was doing Muay Thai and kickboxing, so didn't really hurt my hands. But yeah, I mean, semi-normal, but at the same time, like, a bit of self-defense, you know. I told cops once that, oh, it was self-defense when I got in trouble once for a fight. But yeah, I mean, what are you going to do, sit there and take it?
I think, listen, I've got to be careful what I say here because I don't want to kind of, like, separate the whole kind of male-female kind of thing.
Why do it? Who cares? Don't be so...
No, but I'm just saying that for me, I kind of listen to what you're saying and I think, like, my daughter's, like one.
Yeah.
And I think, like, would I be happy if my daughter was...
sticking up for herself?
Not just sticking up for herself, but getting into, like, these kind of level fights with... Before, not as a professional boxer, I'm on about kind of on the street or... Yeah. Listen, I'm not saying the reasons are wrong at all. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, would I be happy with that? And it kind of poses a question in my head, that's all.
Yeah, of course.
Is that fair for me to say that?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, I don't think any parent would be happy with what I went through and what I did in my teens, to be fair. You know, so, yeah, I suppose it's not really normal. But here I am, world champ.
So there's silver lining in some of that story.
Yeah, it all prepared me. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I definitely didn't mind a car park fight, that's for sure. I'm like, yeah, let's go. Yeah.
A car park fight, it's mad. But it's mad because, like I said to you, without me sounding... And it's not like a sexist comment or anything. Because you're talking as a woman, it's like it is. It's not something I'm used to hearing that women are having car park fights. Yeah. And
well, I feel like a lot of women that start boxing, maybe a little bit, not so much now, but maybe around my age or a little bit younger, it was always like, oh, yeah, I just, you know, went to boxer size class and I just felt like I really liked punching, so I thought I'd have a fight. And a lot of the amateur girls, like, weren't actually into boxing. They just were like, it's not like I want to hurt people. I've always wanted to hurt people. Do you know what I mean? And that's why the way I am, like, I've just always had to fight back that I suppose, that aggression where I just want to, like, really, like, fuck people up, you know? So I remember in the amateurs, I had, like, one of the girls in the amateurs be like, Ebony, you know, you don't always have to, like, try and hurt people. I'm like, what the fuck are we doing then? Like, if you're not trying to hurt me, like, what are you trying to do? But then it's, like, amateurs are more point scoring, I suppose. But I was never an amateur boxer. I mean, I never fought like an amateur and I never watched amateur boxing ever. And I still don't personally watch it much now, you know. But, yeah, so I was just like, yeah, he's got to fucking knock him out. Like Mike Tyson, Kosuzu, you know.
Is that to do with your own personality? Because you said there that what's the point of kind of, if you're going to do it, do something, do it properly. But is that across the board with your whole life kind of full in rather than kind of, yeah?
Oh, definitely I'm all in. Yeah, I'm all in. Everything that I do. And it's not that it doesn't take me long to commit to something, but when I say I'm going to do something, it comes out of my mouth verbally. And if I've told someone or even if I've said it, it's like I'm manifesting it, so it happens. And so I've got to do everything I can, whatever lengths, you know what I mean, I can to get there. And no matter how much I have to sacrifice, you know, I'll do it. And, that's just how I am. But I don't say that about a lot of things. I'm not one of those people that say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this. And, you know, there's like not dreamers, but people just like to say, I'm going to do a lot of things and they never fucking do anything. I'm not like that. I have a couple of things that I say I'm going to do and I fucking do them. Yeah.
Okay, look, tell me about a time that you...
I can swear.
Wow, this is the thing. This is my podcast. You can do what the fuck you want. I'm still like, I'm still making the rules for the podcast, but until I've established some no swearing rules, you're good. Tell me about a time that you felt like you were fighting a losing battle. You can interpret that however you want. When did you feel like you were fighting a losing battle?
Oh, God, these are some tough questions. Fighting a losing battle.
We can go back to the normal shit I ask fucking week.
Are
you fighting, Ebony?
Yeah, no, it takes me a while to think about this stuff because my life is so intense. My life is so dense. Like, it's so deep. There's so many things I've done. I've lived like 5 lifetimes in one, you know what I mean? Like, there's so much. So for me to decipher, to kind of think of what can I say, what kind of works with this question, there's probably many, but then... I've got to think of which one I really think is a standout or something. Like, nothing actually comes to my head, so I have to sit here and think, you know, like, okay, what's a losing battle? What was the question?
Yeah, look, the question was, tell me about a time you felt like you were losing, you were fighting a losing battle.
Fighting a losing battle? Maybe...
Do you feel like I'm the teacher now?
No, I'm just thinking. Maybe I hate giving fucking attention to this cunt because I never fucking talk about it and there's a reason. I had a coach towards the end of my amateur career and for my pro debut, which wasn't Arnold, who everyone's seen and everyone knows I talk about. But, I remember when I snapped my ankle and I had to leave that gym And he was manipulative, very manipulative. And he was like manipulating, trying to manipulate me to think that I was a problem. Do you know what I mean? Because he got a new partner that didn't like him training women. And so, but he, instead of being like, what's the word? Like not being a coward and just saying, look, this is, I've got this problem. Yeah, it was like, it was putting it back on me, like I'm a problem. And I remember always arguing and going, what the fuck? You're saying all these things that are not true. Like, about me, like as in just being like a narcissist, you know what I mean? So I feel like whenever you're trying to talk to a narcissist, it's a losing battle. That's the only thing I can think of, really. Like everything that's, nothing's a losing battle for me otherwise. Like it's, it might be hard, but it's not a losing battle. It's only a losing battle when you lose, and I haven't lost anything that I've tried to do. Sure. Do you know what I mean? Everything I've done, I've finished it. You know, I can say, yeah, halfway through my fucking master's degree, I fucking thought I'm never going to do this, but I did it. You know, me fighting to, you know, get through my beginning of my professional career, I thought, fuck me, I'm spending fucking $4,500 to fight. Like, I'm not even getting paid. I'm having to pay for so much. Like, my first five fights, my first three or four fights cost me like 12.5 to like 14K. Do you know what I mean? Like, because I'm a woman in Australia, boxing's not big for women, you know, and that was hard. It was like no promoters wanted to take on women. No promoters wanted to actually even, you know, put money into investing into a novice or a debut female fighter. And that wasn't even that long ago, but women's boxing was fucking nothing. And it's like, no one even knows who you are. So we're not going to spend $4,500 for opponents and to pay for all the accommodation and the flights and everything. So you have to pay for it, you know? And then I remember when I had to try and find a coach again, it was really hard for me to find a coach because no one wanted to train women in Australia, like pros, like all the big name coaches in Australia were training men. They're not training a girl for fucking $2,000. You know what I mean? They're not going to make any money from that. Look at me now. You know what I mean? And I battled through it, and so I went overseas, you know, and I built, and not the UK. I went to the US first and built over there, and yeah, and then the UK, obviously. But I could have given up. I could have gone, fuck, I don't have this money, or, you know, so hard to get a fight, no promoters want to put me on, you know, like it's, I could have given up, but I didn't. So again, it's not really fighting a losing battle, like, because I won, you know.
No, I think you've answered that perfectly in your situation, because I think, like, a lot of people. Listen, with no disrespect, you're not like 21 anymore. Oh, well, you're not, are you?
I'm 26.
You're not 21 anymore. So, and you've had to kind of do what you did. And I think, no, but you've had to, like, and I've said this in loads of interviews that we've done, you've had to do it all yourself.
Yeah,
you've had to market yourself, and you still are.
So I'm promoted, but I'm still fucking promoting myself.
But it's fucking worked. But it's worked for you. Yeah. It's not mean, listen, you can inspire kind of a generation of female fighters. But I think because it's your story, it works for you.
Exactly.
It's not necessarily going to work for everyone else.
Well, you know, I can't imagine a 21-year-old, a 22-year-old, I mean, even some 30-year-olds, being able to go out and have the social intelligence, the security and the confidence to be able to network like I did to get where I had to do, because it's a networking and it's putting yourself out there, it's taking a risk, it's spending money to go and put your face out there, it's taking up time, like, forget about fucking COVID and all that. Like, I was over in America spending money every week, like, not every weekend, big fights, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a weekend just to go to America to be at the fight so my face could be seen there so I could get interviewed by Fight Hype, by Ellie Sekback, to be talked to the fight people there, do you know what I mean, to get my name out there. So then I signed with an American manager, you know, who got me fights in America. So, I mean, that was all part of it. Like, but, you know, you can't do that if you're, like, a shy, non-worldly 21-year-old that's not confident, like, you know. And that, the only reason I was able to do that is because, fuck, I've been through hell and back and I've met all walks of life and I'm very intelligent, you know, and socially intelligent. So people can't do what I do, you know. They don't know what I've done. I mean, it would take fucking years to explain what I've actually really done and how I've got here. People just think, oh, I've gone, here's my tits, fucking sign me. Yeah, but it's not like that at all. Like, that doesn't fucking work. Otherwise, there'd be so many women where I am, because there's been plenty of girls that, you know, you've probably tried to do that and got nowhere, you know, because it's not just about that. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what I'm fucking talking about, but it's true. It's fucking so
it's
much
all right.
Fun. Yeah, you have to have your own story, and that's it. Be you. That's my message. Be you, be real. You know, don't let no one tell you you can't, and you just do your thing. You know, you can take bits. I've got a blueprint. Yeah, you can follow it, but you can't follow it exactly because it's not going to work for everyone. You know, if you're not confident in doing things, you're not going to work. If you can't, you know, if you don't have the banter or if you don't have whatever, you know, you can't be an ebony. You have to be yourself. But you can kind of take tips from it and go, okay, well, you know, she's online doing interviews or she's doing that on Twitter, or you can take those little bits, you know, but you got to make it your own. So, and I think I've opened up a big world and a different kind of footpath for a lot of people, which is great. Because before me, it was like, you have to be like Katie Taylor or you're not going to be successful. Even when I came on the scene, it was like, you need to be more like Katie Taylor. I'm like, okay, I'll just go win fucking 2 gold medals and fucking be Irish and have an Irish fan base. Like, sure. Like, what the hell? You know, like, I'm not Katie Taylor. I'm never going to be Katie Taylor. So I've got to do my own path. You know what I mean? Like, it annoys me when people say that. You got to be like, why don't you be like this person? I'm like, because I'm not fucking them. You know, I'm me. And being me has got me here. Like, at the beginning of me coming onto the UK scene, it was intense, man. I got so much hate. You know, I got a lot of love as well, obviously. But I did get a lot of hate and doubters. And I always had to prove myself, which I don't really push to prove myself. I do it in the ring. I just keep being me. Didn't listen to anyone. Didn't listen to people telling me I can't do this and you shouldn't be doing that. And you're bad for boxing. You're so bad for boxing. You're so bad for little girls looking up to you. And I'm like, not really. I think I'm pretty a fucking amazing role model, to be fair. You know, sorry I got fucking implants. Like, shit. Everyone has fake lips and implants now anyways. Like, good luck finding a role model that doesn't. Anyway.
No, listen, no, because since you come on the UK scene, I've kind of seen everything. And, like, I interviewed you, maybe 2.5 years ago, just like in that COVID situation. And I interviewed you and got in touch to do that because, like, I see all the noise on social media. So that works even from, like, my perspective to come to you for an interview. And I think since then, like I said to you...
You can see the change. Yeah. You can see the change in women's boxing. And I don't want to say, oh, it's all me, but...
Man, you're a part of it. You're a part of it.
There's definitely girls wearing it in lingerie now and, like, being okay to be pretty and doing these kind of things, you know what I mean? Like, it was, like, so looked down upon before, you know? But I took all the bullets and I took all the hate and now it's like, oh, another, you know, way. No one even says anything. Although I still get a lot of hype around mine, but, I mean, yeah.
I know you touched on this earlier on, but I do want you to talk to me about if you were to single out a cause that you believed is worth fighting for, not boxing related, but you talked about kind of something that you feel strongly about. I just wanted you to touch on that again.
Look, for me, you know, something that's really close to my heart is obviously anything to do with youth and child abuse and also addiction. I'm really strong about that. So these are two things where I think, like, children that are going through child abuse or domestic violence and they're seeing this kind of stuff, whatever it may be, you know, I think it's important that these kids understand that you're a survivor, you can survive and you can get outside of that and you can grow up and you can be okay. You know what I mean? It's don't let what things that happen to you when you're younger or whatever you go through mold your future in a bad way, you know. I think it's really important to kind of show this youth that's a survival thing, you know what I mean, and that then you can grow from that and it's don't give up on yourself. And same with addiction, I think it's really important, like, there's people that just feel like they just can't get out of it, you know, and it's hard and I've been there and it's hard and you just know that it takes a long time, right? It's just, I feel like people need to see that it's possible, I suppose, and I think this is something that I'm going to go deeper into when I finish boxing because, you know, I'm focusing on my boxing. But I think it's important with any kind of addiction, but, you know, if we're talking about drugs and alcohol particularly, you know, that you can, it's any time, you can change your life at any time. You'll have, like, drug addicts or you'll have alcoholics at, like, you know, fucking 50, 60, whatever, but it's never too late and they just think it's too late. They think they can't change or they think that they can't or they might not have the support around them, but I just want to really, like, support that and know that you actually can and you can, I suppose you need the right people around and the right guidance as well and belief in yourself, belief that you can fucking do it, because the problem is so many people are like, I can't do it, and then they fall off once and that's it, I can't do it, you know? So I think those two things are really important to me. I'm actually part of, there's a recovery running up in Leeds and I'm going to be going up there hopefully next Saturday and doing a run with them, and it's a really big cause. They do a lot for addictions. People just having a group of people, like-minded people, and getting out and doing activities. And this is the kind of stuff I love to be part of because it's really close to my heart, you know, and it's a really big subject for me.
I think from what I'm gauging, from what you're just saying to me there and what we spoke about, obviously, off camera, that there are a lot of things you say that are close to you that I'm assuming that you've been through these things that you're talking about now, which are very kind of very serious things. But right now isn't the time or the place. Not even this interview as such, but just this point of your life to be talking about that kind of stuff.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I feel like it's a time and a place. And I feel like, for me, my focus is becoming a world champion. I'm a world champion. I'm now becoming undisputed. Inspiring people from my hard work and from what I've already done, as in what they see from my graft, from all the things that I push through that they know of, I think that's inspiring enough to show that I'm breaking barriers, I'm breaking stereotypes, and that I'm pushing and not letting people bring me down and drag me down. And I think at the moment with my boxing career, that's a really important message as well. And I think that that's, you know, not being judged and not being and just not letting people tell you what you can and can't do. I think it's so important. And I feel like for me, that's a good focus for me at the moment, because all the negative stuff from my past, which is very negative and it's traumatic, and for me, it's not... Look, don't get me wrong, I could inspire a whole another load of people, but I'm right now, I don't want to bring myself back to that darkness. I don't want to bring myself back to that part or my family, you know what I mean? Because when I start talking about it and it affects my family, you know, like I speak to my parents already, you know, and I just don't think it's the time, and I don't think I need to have that... I say it's negativity, it is positive because I'm where I am now, but it still is negative and it still is traumatic and it still is stuff I don't want to really think about. And I don't want to, like, every time I walk out to the ring or when I'm in the ring, fucking, you know, Chris Lloyd going, oh yeah, you know, when Ebony was this and, you know, she used to be this and now she's this and, oh, you know, or like every interview I do, it's like, tell me about this. Let's talk about this. I'm like, I don't want to fucking talk about it. You know, I'll talk about it when I have nothing else to fucking talk about. But right now I have my goals, my boxing, everything else that I'm doing, my teaching and everything else that I'm doing that is plenty enough. You know, I don't, you know, I don't need to oversaturate my story yet, you know. And when I do really go into it and write a book or whatever I do, I think it's going to be great, you know. And I think it's going to open a lot of eyes to a lot of people as well when they know the real stories. But I just don't think it's something I need right now. I've got so many other things. Some people need to talk about these things. It's a selling point. Let's be honest.
But also, it might help them kind of deal with life well.
Yes, yes. Sorry, I don't want to be fucking rude. I am this whole, like, don't be a victim, you know. But, you know, I'm a bit of a hard cunt. But it is. It can help people, obviously, talking about it as well, you know, whatever the reason. But, you know, I just know that in boxing in particular, when you have a story, negative story, it's just blown up so much. And whether or not it's been blown up, it's a selling thing. And I just don't need it. You know what I mean? I'm going to be focused on Ebony Bridges now, the blonde bomber, and how much work I put in to be where I am, not where I've come from to here, if that makes sense.
So where you are today as Ebony Bridges, as it's very hot here, as the blonde bomber, what are Ebony Bridges' everyday struggles today, as in now? Not in the past, the ones you face every day now.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be to do with boxing.
I think... You know, I'm always having to, you know, I'm so driven and so determined that I'm so tunnel vision that it's very hard for me to have relationships, whether it's like really proper relationships, like, you know, men or whatever, but also friendships or think about other people. I'm extremely selfish, you know. Although I love to help people, which we know, you know, I'm always helping people and stuff, but I am quite, you know, like, it's... I have to make the sacrifices. Like I said, I just left my boyfriend of 10 years in Australia. I left my family, you know, my family. And I know people do this kind of thing all the time, but for me, I'm kind of like just straight out like savage, like, sorry, but you're not part of my future goals. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they're not like this. I don't need to be, I can't live my parents' life because they're sad that I'm leaving, or I can't live their life. I can't live like my family's life. I've got to live my life. You know what I mean? I think there's that as well. And just trying to keep up with keeping those relationships, you know, because I'm not thinking about anyone else. Like, I'm thinking about my training, getting up, training and doing everything I have to do here. So I don't connect with people. I don't message people and call my mom or anyone, you know, I'm not like that. So I think I definitely, that kind of stuff is hard for me to maintain, because if it was up to me, I just fucking wouldn't talk to anyone, you know. I just do my work. For me, work, social media is work. It's business. You know, I don't get on there for fucking fun. You know, it's business and it's work for me. You know, so that doesn't include when I'm like engaging with people or talking to people there. That's it's different to actually checking in with family and like friends and stuff like that. Because if I had a choice, I wouldn't fucking do it. Because it's just, I'm doing it for them, You know, and I don't, and you got to do that as a person. Like, you know, you can't just be all one-sided. So, but yeah, I think that's a struggle for me to keep up, that maintain that kind of being a good human in the sense of keeping relationships. And I think, I mean, if we're talking about boxing, it's still just a struggle. Like, I mean, every day with boxing, you know, to still push out there and get what's right for me. And I think what I deserve and my value and my worth in boxing, you know, I feel like that's still a big struggle for me. Maybe not for fans, you know, and for other people, but, you know, within the boxing community, behind the scenes of boxing, it's fucking, you know, man, it's dark and it's dirty and it's fucked. And the boxing world is it's horrible. It's savage, you know what I mean? And I had points where, I mean, I remember in the Beck Connolly fight, the prep of that, and my friends will listen to this, know this, I was going to quit boxing. I was like, I'm going to just fucking smash her and that's it, I'm done. I'm quit. I'm going back home, drill with my boyfriend, live on my acreage, you know, my beautiful house and have a family because fuck boxing. I'm fucking sick of it, sick of boxing. You know, I've done that a few times and anyone that's a boxer will probably agree and they've probably gone through that many times because that's what boxing does. You're like, fuck this, fuck boxing sometimes, you know, and like even with the hate, you know, like I get a lot of hate. I'm pretty okay with it to be fair. But sometimes I'm just like fucking mate, like, you know what I mean? Like if they had any idea of actually what goes on, I think people would have a bit more, like, just be shut their fucking mouth a little bit, you know. And, yeah, I think what bothers me a lot is, yeah, I suppose trying to prove that how hard I work to get here, because there's still so many people that just think, oh, you know, like, you're good-looking or whatever, I mean, so they think. But, you know, so you just get whatever, you know. But I think that's just society in general. If you're a woman and you're attractive, then you must, you know, you get everything easy, you know. But we know that's not true. I know that's not true. But yeah, I feel like that's my battles, I suppose. Fucking eating broccoli every fucking day, having to run every day is a fucking battle. I love bashing bitches and bashing, punching shit, but everything else that goes with it, you know, it's fucking, you know, nothing's easy.
When was the last time you felt like you were fighting back tears?
Fighting back tears. I was about to say, when I had a really bad training session last week, like, I was so upset. we're laughing about that, but I get really fucking angry at myself in training if I don't do something, you know what I mean? I get really fucking frustrated where I'm just like, fuck, man, like, because I'm so fucking hard on myself. Like, if anyone watched my Celebrity SAS, they will see how hard I was on myself. Like, I'm so hard on myself. I'm just such a fucking perfectionist. So,
what, to an emotional point where it's, like, kind of mentally, like, breaking you?
Sometimes, like I said, like, you know, I can have like a bad spar and I'm like, that's it, my fucking day's ruined. I'm like fucking so pissed off and like, I'll ruin, and it ruined my day and like even ruined Tibbs because he'll be like, I remember sometimes I have a spar and I'm like, I was so fucking shit. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, that was so shit. He's like, oh, but you did this. And I'm like, no, but I did this and this and this and this. And he's like, you know what? I was actually really happy with that. But now, because of your fucking attitude and your mood, you fucking ruined it for me. I'm like, what? I'm just pointing out the facts. But I'm also such a realist sometimes and I know boxing, that, like, I pick on myself and I just want to be perfect. So, I mean, that's these kind of things that I do battle with, you know. Yeah, I suppose. Holding back. So, besides fucking training and having a shit session, when I left my partner in Australia, that was hard, man. You know, he's perfect. Like, well, perfect. Perfect for someone that's perfect for the old me, I think, you know. Like, but you realise that... you got to make it was really hard to leave someone that's on paper so perfect, and we love each other. I love him dearly, but I loved him enough to know that he deserved better. You know, he deserved better. He deserved to have someone that wanted to be there. Because I fucking go home, I'm like, I don't want to be here. I hate it. Like, I want to be back building. I want to be in the UK building my career, building my brand, like boxing, fighting, learning. You know, so it's not fair on someone you love to let them be with someone that's never there, and then when they are there, just doesn't want to be there. So like those kind of things. I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's a tough thing that not many people will ever go through, having to do that, to make that kind of choice of, like, it's a fantasy question, is it? It's like,
love or
your job or your kind of your partner.
Yeah, it is. It's like love or dreams. Love, like, you know, love, happy, family, beautiful fucking $13 million house, like beautiful, you know, perfect future set up, or your dreams, nowhere near as much money. Like, fuck, who knows what's going to happen? You could fucking break something, get brain damage, and that's it, it's all over. Like, which one do you choose? It's like risk over fucking, it's like comfortability, though, over risk. And I think I was just like, you know, I wasn't born for comfortability. I wasn't born for being mediocre. I was born for being fucking great. I was born for greatness, and I just had to just fucking take that risk, you know. And who knows, maybe I'll just be single forever and never have kids. And I do really would love to have kids, obviously. But I just knew that if I was to stay, I'd be one of those fucking old boxers. It was like, you know, I was good in my heyday and I could have done this and, you know, I could have done that. But, you know, I fucking my wife, you know, and my kids. So I chose them, you know. And that's what I hear that all the time. And that's fair because I don't have any kids and I wasn't married. It was just a 10-year relationship. I think if you had kids, it would be a lot harder. But I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to be that person telling in my old, talking about my heyday of what I could have been, you know. So that would have just killed me. So that's why I made the choice. Anyways, sorry, fucking tangents.
Can I just ask you one more question about that? Did your partner, without you can say as much as you want or not, did they understand it? I'm not saying they agreed with it. Yeah. Did they understand your mentality of what you had to do in order for you to kind of achieve those dreams that you have?
Look, we've been together for 10 years. He's seen me go through my bodybuilding, my degree, my master's degree, my boxing, my amateurs, you know, going through my, in the beginning of my pros, was like she was talking about another coach. Like he's seen me make goals and smash them, and he knows from being by my side that when I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it, and I achieve everything, and I push and drive to achieve everything. Like when I was doing my master's degree, I would never cried so much in my life. I would cry, I have anxiety all the time. That was the worst experience of my life, doing that and juggling three jobs and my training. You know what I mean? Like it was intense, but I pushed through it, persevered. And he would say to me, like, just fucking, like, and everyone would say, just stop. Like, it's not worth it. Like, it's not healthy. You know, the stress that you put yourself under. But it's also because I'm such a high achiever. Could have just got P's and just passed and just done a little bit. But I'm not like that, you know. And he knows I'm like that. He's been watching for 10 years. And so he knew, he was just waiting for it, I think, you know, to be honest. It was like, well, to be honest, I didn't think you'd be here much longer. Like he kind of just knew, and he was extremely supportive because he loves me. And when you, like I said, you know, when you love each other and you're good friends, you can't hold someone back. And he didn't want to do that. And he knew no matter what he said would keep me, because he knows what I'm like and nothing gets in the way of my goals, and not even him, unfortunately. I think he's been used to being like second to that. And I mean, in a way, I kind of need a partner that's going to be like that, or they're part of it. If you're part of it, then you're with it with me. But he wasn't part of it. He didn't want to be part of it, and he didn't come on a journey with me. So it made us be living two separate lives, supporting me still, but it's just not, you know, it's not together. So I think, I was lucky in that sense. It wasn't difficult. He didn't make it difficult in that sense for me, and he's still supportive. He still talked to me every day. So
I think it's mad listening to this because, like I said to you, it's not a choice that a lot of people have to go through, especially kind of where you are as well. It's not like you...
I'm like, 25.
But yeah. No, I meant
I've got
in terms
of... a couple
of
fertility years left, fertile years left.
Are you putting an advert out? By the
way? I think I need to start a TV show, The Bomber Needs a Husband. No, you know, like, we got...
No, but the fact that you've literally come across the other side of the world... Yeah. To do this as well, and I think that you've had to make them choices. People don't go through that stuff. They've got choices to make in life. Do you know what I mean? But it's not what you've done is actually pretty fucking extreme.
It is. Yeah, no, definitely. You know what I mean? Like you got, you know, a lot of boxers that obviously just box in their home country, and like they're great, but they've maybe never had to. They don't have to leave their countries because they live in the UK where boxing's amazing, or they live in the US where boxing's great. But you got people like me who are Australian, or you got, you know. Look like, you know, the Kazakhs or the Mexicans. Well, Mexicans have great boxing as well, but, you know, Europeans or whatever that have to leave their homes to go to other countries to get to chase their boxing dreams because it's not big in their country. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, the British or the Americans have it great and they don't realise how lucky they have it to not be able to have to move away from their homes and to such a degree to make those sacrifices. But, I mean, it's some things that they don't maybe not realize that you got to do. Like, it is a big move, mind you. Some people just fucking do it to change their lives anyways. Like, some people just come and pack up and leave their families and go to Australia, like, you know, from all kinds of countries. So I mean, it's people do it, but yeah, it's I did have to leave a lot, and I had it pretty good at home, but I plan on having it even better over here.
everything you've achieved so far, and there's so much more for you to achieve in boxing, we know that. But everything, not just in boxing, but just everything in your life that you've achieved, do you think that you've had to fight for everything that you've achieved and nothing looks like it's been given to you on a plate? It looks like everything. Yeah. And I'm not just talking about boxing. I mean, every aspect of your life. Yeah. Does it feel like you've had to fight for that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Like, even when I was young, I was a mechanic, right? So I was a mechanic 20 years ago, nearly 20 years ago, I started my apprenticeship. There was no women in mechanics 20 years ago, maybe 10, maybe 5, 10 years ago, women were starting to cross over in trades, but that was even hard. You know, like being a girl, the only woman in a male-dominated industry like that. When I was bodybuilding as well, like, you know, like working and everything that I did in my university degrees. I mean, I started university at a later age, like when I was like 25 or 25, 26. And, you know, so I had to, and I had my own, you know, house and stuff. So it wasn't like, hey, mum and dad, look after me while I go to uni and get in a Pierce and fucking have uni parties and like living the uni life. It wasn't like that. It was like, okay, I got to get up. And I was training as well because I was either bodybuilding or I was boxing. And, you know, I had to get up and train, then go to uni all day and then get back and work all night till 3 a.m. And, like, it was just like I didn't have a day off for 7 years. Literally, I worked 3 jobs, 7 years, because I worked weekends, I worked weekdays, I worked 3 jobs, plus I was studying and I was doing my sport. Do you know what I mean? And mind you, that was my choice because, like my mum said to me, you know, it's your choice. You know, you can give up the sport. You don't have to box or you don't have to make that much money or you don't have, but I wanted it all. So I put myself through hell to get it all, you know. Some people can't. Some people can't manage that. I mean, I fucking barely managed it. But I did it because I couldn't pick. I couldn't pick between money or between career or between my boxing, do you know what I mean? So, or my sport. Sorry, potential. Yeah, nothing's ever been fucking easy, that's for sure.
Where does your...
That's probably why I'm such a hustler. Sorry. That's probably why I'm such a hustler. Everyone's like, oh, she's always hustling. I'm like, yeah, I'm a fucking hustler because I've always had to hustle. Fucking hustle hard. Like, you don't get nothing in life by sitting fucking still. And I tell you what, I definitely fucking didn't. And I wouldn't have. I wouldn't have. So, yeah, it's just, it's in me.
Where does this fighting spirit, where does the Ebony Bridges fighting spirit come from? Where do you think it's kind of rooted and where does it ultimately come from?
I think it comes from me having a second chance at life when I was younger. So going through what I went through in my teens and changing my life around, and literally I would probably be dead. So I literally believe I got a second chance at life. There was a point in my life where it just, I was like, this is a fucking literally second chance of to live, to actually fucking live, to live my life and make something of myself. And when I decided that after everything I went through, I was like, well, I'm not going to waste another fucking minute because I've just wasted fucking years of my life being and doing and whatever I did, you know. So now I'm not going to waste a fucking second and I'm not going to just fucking, you know, I'm going to commit to whatever I do, you know, and I'm going to make something of myself and I'm going to use... It was almost like it's an addiction, right? Because I've got an addictive personality. But it was almost like I needed to keep busy and I needed to have goals and I needed to do those things to keep me off the street. Do you know what I mean? Like I needed these things to keep me so obsessed so that there was nothing else that I'd be thinking about. So I think in a way it was a bit of an escape, just like other things were an escape. I think I used, whether it was my studying or my boxing, or my definitely my bodybuilding, because that was really my bodybuilding that kind of was the first thing that I went into when I took the different path. So I think that for me was really where it all started and where I was like, you know, you can't fucking, this is a second chance. Like you can't waste your life. You're made for so much more. You've literally got a second chance at your life. And what are you going to do with it? You're not going to fucking throw it away again, you know? So I think that's where it comes from. And even though I've proven over and over again that I'm not wasting my fucking life and that, you know, I don't have quit and, like, you know, I still have to keep proving myself or keep pushing and keep trying to be my best, you know, because I think that's an example that I want to set for the people around me, my friends around me. You know, you see my friends around me, anyone that's around me, I give that energy and I give that this fucking TED Talks and that same inspo to all my friends. You know, you see Nick, you see... You know, like all my friends, my family, my students, the kids, people in the fucking gym. You know, that's why Tibbs loves me there because I'm there and I'm. And they said to me today, Jimmy said, you know what, Eb, you fucking set the bar. Like you've set the bar for everyone. You know, and that's what I want to do. I want to show people like this is where it's at. you know, and so I got to keep it up. Can't go, okay, cool, like I'm good now. I'm just going to go fucking go back and just chill on my lounge. I just can't do it. So I think it's really about within myself continuing to do it, but also having that effect on people around me, because I just want to help people as well as myself.
Do you feel like, whether it's kind of daily or just in your life, that you're fighting demons? Do you feel like that?
Nah, not anymore. Hey, not really. Sometimes, maybe if I don't have a fight or or if something really bad happens, I think I might get a little bit like fuck it kind of thing, but it doesn't last because I just know how far I've come, and I just know that how it works when you're trying to achieve something, right? It's a process, and it's human nature to want to quit when things get hard. It's human nature, you know, right at the end of the race is when you start pulling back because you're almost at the end, or when you're almost at the end, almost succeeding, that's when people slack off, and that's when the people that don't slack off, that's how they win, right? And every time I set a goal, I always picture it to be like this. We always do, because yeah, it's going to be this, and this is how it's going to work. And then it just goes like that, right? It's like, it's fucked, but it happens every time. And I've been through it enough, and I've pushed myself through so much breaking points and so much toughness and so many barriers mentally and physically, that now I've conditioned myself that when I get hurt or something bad happens, I just think, it's all right, it's meant to happen. It's all right, we're going to push through this, and it's happened for a reason. That's my thought, because everything happens for a reason. And it's happened for a reason. Now I'm just going to have to keep pushing through it, because on the other side is the fucking, is the gold. On the other side is the win. On the other side is the happiness. Here, it's a bit of a tough spot, but I know, because I've done it so many times, I've pushed through that part, that I know on the other side is the happiness. I think people that haven't done that, haven't pushed themselves mentally past barriers, because they give up when it gets hard. So many people, and they give up when it's too hard, or they're lazy, or whatever it may be. They've never been able to do that, to push past, to see this, what happens on the other side of that. I think people struggle because I've done it over and over again. It just gets, it's easier and easier in a sense, you know. And I think physically the same. That's why we can push through physicality, like, you know, snap my ankle, the SAS, and all these kind of things. And I have that kind of in me where I don't quit physically, is because I've pushed through pain, physical pain, and I've been okay, and I've come out the other end. So I think it's just conditioning, mental conditioning, physical conditioning, where I never am fighting demons anymore. Those demons have been fought a long time ago, and now I'm the fucking demon.
Love that. Love that. No, I love that. Look,
I'm going deep.
It's all right. It's fine. It's fine. Listen, you fight for yourself. You fight for, you know, your family. You fight for your fans. Yes. You fight for, like, I'm going to say Australia, whatever, your community, etc.
I fight for women. I fight for females who want to be feminine. I fight for girls who get judged. I fight for the people that get judged. I fight for fucking all of it.
The question is, who fights for you? Who backs you? Who's in your corner? Who's fighting your kind of battles for, like, not for you, but you've got as part of kind of people that you can fall back on?
As in, like, oh, obviously my family, you know, my family always back, they're going to be there and support me no matter what, you know. And I do have a small group of people and friends, you know, that always back me, you know, like obviously Nicola and Susie. I've got my sponsors, Steve, Kenny from Essex, Car Group, Steve from FCI. Like, I've got some really good sponsors here that are like family to me. I've got Phil back home, Phil Richards. He's been with me from the start as a sponsor, but he's like family. And these guys back me. I got, you know, my agent, Alan. Like, there's a few people that are really close to me that's taken me a while to get to this, because I've been burned so many times, especially in boxing, you know, like, just...
You'll probably get burned again at some point.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Boxing's full of fucking... No, mate, let's
start. No, say it, because I'll second it.
Boxing is full of bullshitters and empty promises, fucking full of it, full of fake cunts, full of fucking people that just lie, promise you the world, especially when you're starting out, girls, people promise you the fucking world, and they're all fucking full of shit, and I don't trust anyone, and I fucking work, and when someone says they're going to do something for me, and I say I fucking am on them, because you can't say something to me and not go through with it, because I'm a woman of my word, and I expect people to be people of their words, and if I smell bullshit, I fucking, mate, you cut, like... And there's plenty of people that are like that. that I've done that to, because I'm just like, you know, like, I can't have that people around me. I find it very hard to trust people, but I do have, like I said, a few group of people, and you know, you'll see my close friends on Twitter. You see these people as well, like, they're my guys, and my girlfriend's here in boxing, and I got some friends back in Australia that no matter what, you know. So yeah, I'm lucky. I have probably a circle of about 5 to 7 people that I can really trust, and know my story and know what I'm all about. So yeah, and I wouldn't have been able to say that long ago.
Just out of curiosity, I haven't promised you anything that I haven't done, have I? Because
No, we wouldn't be here.
Okay, just checking.
No,
because I've got
you fucking know, because you'd be hassled. I'm not going to drop names, but some people know because I'm on them.
Just finally, it's been really good. And to be honest with you, like I said, I've done so many interviews with you over the last sort of 2 or 3 years. And I think, you know, I think as much as you can predict, I said this to Fabio the other day, that you guys can almost predict the questions that I'm going to ask, and you know what's kind of coming.
Yeah, you really fucked us up with these questions.
That's the whole fucking point of it, Sheila.
Ha, right. Yeah.
Finally, what would you say, what is the drive behind Ebony and Bridges? What would you say really ultimately drives you as a person?
I just want to be the best I can be, honestly. I just want to be successful in anything that I choose to do, which I know I will be, because I always am, because I manifest that shit. When I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to be something, I make it happen. And I just, as long as I continue to do that, which I will because I put it out into the universe, I believe that, you know, that's my drive. I just want to be great. I just want to be great at everything that I choose to do. Not everything, well, that'd be great, but I just, everything I want to, anything I put my mind to, I want to be the best I can be at it. I might not be the best at it, but I'm going to fucking do a damn good job at it. And and just having that impression on the world and society, being able to have that kind of, you know, message that, fuck, you really can achieve anything. I really believe you can achieve anything if you really put your mind to it. You find a way to do it, you know. If it's meant to be for you, it will be. And you got to work really hard for it. And, yeah, hard work, dedication.
Motherfuckers.
I wish I could just like say one fucking sentence for an answer, but it's just impossible. It's my ADHD, I suppose.
That's why I wanted you on here. Ebony Bridges, listen, I always appreciate your time, and definitely appreciate your time because you've given quite a lot of it today. And I know you'd rather be, this is actually one of the hottest days of the year doing this. And
My kitten.
Oh, your kitten.
Up in my bedroom, and I feel so sorry. You know, I get separation anxiety with her, but yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, like I said, appreciate your time. Thank you very, very much for coming on to this podcast. I really wanted to get you on because I knew that we've not done this kind of chat before. We've not done this kind of chat. And I think, like I said, when you're retired and you're done, and after your book's out, obviously.
Yeah.
Plug that. plug that, it's not even fucking out, right?
Got to tour that shit.
But I'd like to kind of, maybe the follow-up to this is when kind of everything's said and done and you're kind of... you're content with your boxing career.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, most people know my story from like 18, 19, 20, from when I started bodybuilding, because that's, you know, usually when I start like my story. And then, you know, everyone knows, you know, card girl, ring girl to fucking world champion, you know, and then soon it's going to be ring girl to undisputed. But then when I'm finished, it's going to be where I started, where I really started to undisputed, and that's one hell of a fucking story. So stay tuned because, mate, you think you're inspired now? I'm telling you. And I know it will change a lot of people's lives, and I know I can inspire a lot more people, but it's not that time yet.
Okay. Well, Ebony Bridges, thank you very much. No, that's not. I don't know what fucking accent.
Right. Nice try there. Nice try.
Thank you very much. And like I said, yeah, we'll get back to our kind of day-to-day job with fight news, etc. when that's relevant.
Hopefully I get some fight news.
We're not talking about that on air. Right. Ebony, thank you very much.
Sports Social Podcast Network.